Adoption is a beautiful but often very, very complicated process for many, both birthing parents and adopting parents. And so today I am joined by Terry Marcroft from Unplanned Good to talk all about adoption and what we as pro-lifers need to know about the adoption situation and how it can be spoken about. Stay tuned. Hi, folks. Welcome back to the Pro-Life Guys podcast, a show dedicated to equipping you with the tools that you need to have compassionate and compelling conversations about abortion so that together we can change minds, save lives, and transform our culture. My name is Cam. I am the host of the show. Apologies for, again, the gap in content. I know that we had content earlier this week and last week as well, but I know that early July it was pretty dead for a little bit. Apologies for that. I'm excited to get back into the recording booth, and by booth I mean just my office and setting up all of the recording equipment. And I appreciate you being along for the ride. Whether this is your first episode or whether you've been a longtime listener, I thank each and every one of you for being along for the ride, especially those of you who have signed up as subscribers on the YouTube channel. We are now officially over 700 subscribers, which is really cool and allows me to get more and more guests like Terry, who reached out because she saw the podcast and thought that it would be a good opportunity to have a conversation about adoption. As I mentioned a little bit off the top, today we are talking all about adoption. Terry is not only an adoptive parent herself, but also is the executive director and head honcho of Unplanned Good. She has authored two books, one tailored towards kind of abortion-minded or a more general audience, one tailored more towards pro-lifers. I've got a couple of copies of them, signed copies no less, that I will be raffling off to a couple of people. These two books, both signed, two copies of each, I'll be raffling off to the people. I will put everyone into a draw. I apologize for stumbling over the words. I will put everyone who comments on the YouTube video. I'll drop the YouTube video in the link below. I will be entering everyone who comments, good, bad, ugly, on the YouTube video. Even if you are a bot that is trying to get me to sign up for how you're going to better optimize my YouTube channel performance, you might end up with a copy of this pro-life book because you will be entered into the draw. And so I have two copies of each of the books, both signed, or all four of them are signed. Please comment on the YouTube video. And without further ado, what are you even signing up for? What are these books all about? I am not going to explain them all. I'm going to let Terry do that. And here's my conversation with Terry Marcroft. I'm executive director of Unplanned Good Adoption Facilitation Services in some capacity. That's not the official name of it. It's called Unplanned Good. I don't know if you would call it an adoption facilitation, but she works with organizations and agencies across the country to facilitate adoptions, which is why I called it that. But without further ado, here it is. All right, Terry, thank you so much for taking the time to join the Pro-Life Guys podcast. How are you doing?
Cam, I am so thrilled to be with you today. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Yeah, this is a joy. I have honestly been talking to a number of people here in Canada from the adoption world about coming on to the Pro-Life Guys podcast. And for a number of reasons, I'm sure that we can dive into it at some point, there's been an air of hesitancy of people wanting to come on to an explicitly pro-life show. And I know that in Canada, there's a lot of restrictions around how favorable you can be to one side or the other, all that kind of thing. We can get into that later, but it was wonderful and providential that you and your team reached out to me over the email and asked if there was interest, and I jumped on it right away because I think that adoption, as we're going to get into, is such an important topic for us to be talking about in the pro-life movement and ultimately throughout culture.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. If we're going to look at having all the information, then we got to cover both the pro-life and the pro-choice side and provide complete information.
Yes. Well, let's start by talking a little bit about your journey, Terry, because I'm sure that being the executive director of a national nonprofit focused on connecting people with adoption probably isn't a lot of people's career ambition when they're in grade 10 and they're laying out their career goals and whatnot. Was this something that you had always envisioned yourself working in, or is this something that was a little bit of a later revelation in your life?
Definitely a later revelation and never actually anything that I aspired to. It was not my plan for myself at all. In fact, so when my husband and I married when we were in our mid-30s, and so it was a little bit, we were came a little bit late to that party. And when we so the whole thing started with when we were trying to start our family, and that turned out to be extremely difficult, which was shocking since I have five sisters who all had kids. And it was just shocking that we had any issues with that. And so we went through a whole infertility journey. We went through a whole adoption journey. And finally, we were able to successfully adopt our infant daughter. So then, from there on, we were just very happy that that had happened. And we were feeling like a more complete family. And we were raising her. And after about 10 years of raising my daughter, when I was well into my 40s, then at that point, many of my friends who had also postponed having kids were hoping to have them and started struggling with infertility and then found it really difficult to adopt. And that was the thing that my friends, when they tried to adopt, they didn't have an easier time. They weren't able to successfully adopt. And so I dug into that. I wanted to understand what the issue was. And to make the long story shorter, it turned out that the issue was that there, even though there are many, many, many unplanned pregnancies, both in Canada and the US every year, very few of those women choose adoption. Only about 1% in the US, and it's a little over 2% in Canada that choose adoption out of all those unplanned pregnancies. So that's why it's hard to find a baby to adopt in your family.
Yeah, maybe let's pull the cover back on that a little bit, because obviously that I'm sure is the underpinning as to how that has grown from wanting to help out a number of friends and even make other people's journey easier than yours may have been towards a national nonprofit. Maybe let's talk a little bit about that, because not only are there very few people, but like you also alluded to, there's a tremendous number of people that are on waiting lists to be able to adopt infant children, and the disconnect. And is the disconnect a simple solution, or is the disconnect because of a combination of factors from your experience and from what you kind of dug up through your research? What is it that contributes towards, like you said, only 1% of birth mothers choosing adoption as an outcome for their pregnancies?
So the reason why it's so rare, I mean, there are many reasons why it's so rare. Partly because abortion is just easier in the short term. I mean, we have to admit it seems to be a quick and easy solution. It's marketed that way. And people believe what's marketed. They believe that they can just go take care of this on Saturday morning, go home and then go out to dinner and go on with their life. No problem. And they're told that it's easy and quick. And so if they're only looking at the short term, they would be very tempted to believe that. They do believe that. And so we try at Unplanned Good, we try to appeal to the mentors in that woman's life. We try to appeal to her parents, her teachers, her pastors, whoever is influencing her, to point out that that's only a short-term situation. When you look at the long term, it's not easier or healthier or happier to because abortion has long-term consequences that people don't talk about.
Absolutely.
And so if they're looking at the big picture, it's easier for us to get people to think about either continuing the pregnancy and then raising the child or continuing the pregnancy and then choosing adoption. Either of those is easier, but you have to take a long-term perspective on it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that we often share in the workshops that we're giving here, that it's impossible in some ways to make either parenting or adoption easier than how easy abortion is perceived to be by so many. And so we need to speak more candidly about abortion while also trying to alleviate some of the hurdles and roadblocks that go into parenting and adoption. Because while, yes, we must make choosing abortion more difficult for many people as they understand the life of their child and everything that goes into that, the long-term impacts that abortion may have on their life and the lives of those around them, we do still need to, like you said, be making these processes far more accessible, far more approachable and realistic for people in America and around the world. And that's a huge part of the ministry that Unplanned Good is working on. And I'm curious where that step happened. So you go from working with friends and other people in your community that are going through a similar journey to a national nonprofit. Was that a gradual process, or was that kind of a, you know what, somebody's going to have to do this and why not be me? And let's charge into this full force. What was that step kind of like?
It has been very gradual because I've been at this point, it's 2024 and we started a little bit before 2010. And so it's been 15 years of working on Unplanned Good. And it's been kind of maybe mostly online. It's been mostly an internet-based communications effort to say, you know, rather than only saying no to abortion, let's encourage people to say yes to adoption and just getting the word out about what adoption looks like these days, because it has changed so much from about the year 2000. Before that, they were almost all closed adoptions. And after 2000, they've become almost all open adoptions to some extent. So adoption has changed very much. And we were just letting people know about that for the first 13, 14 years of our running our nonprofit. Then Dobbs got overturned. In 22, that changed everything because all at once, so Dobbs got overturned. Abortion was sent back to the states, at least in the US. And my daughter graduated from college. I decided to retire. And all of these things happened at one time. And that's when I just had it on my heart that I had to write down this information that I knew about abortion or that I knew about adoption and try to get that education done on a mass scale. So that's why I wrote the book, Pro-Choice, Pro-Adoption, just to capture all of that. And then I thought, okay, then I'll be done with that. But every time you think you're done, you find out that you're not.
Isn't that
and
the truth?
So wrote the book in 22 and then started working with my board and figuring out what was going to go happening next. And then started doing speaking engagements all the way through 23. There was a lot of speaking engagements. And then the second book came out, which was a Christian version of the same message, you know, but the first book, I made a strong effort, had a strong intention to keep it from a moral standpoint, more from a practical and physical standpoint, because I wanted pro-choice people to understand if you're advocating for abortion, understand what that means for the health of the woman, for the health of her future babies, for her own future health with regard to mental illness and the link to breast cancer, all of these different things. If you're going to advocate for abortion, know what you're suggesting.
Yeah.
And so that all went into the book, as well as if you don't understand adoption, it's harder to advocate for as well.
Yes.
So if you can understand adoption and know why people might choose it today, then that'll make you a more effective advocate for adoption.
Absolutely. And so maybe let's dive into that a little bit further, because as we were talking before we hit the record button, that so often those who advocate in favor of abortion are very single-minded, and yet rarely have I ever spoke to anybody, and I've spoken to literally thousands of people who have chosen abortion tragically in their life, and nobody wants to have an abortion. Nobody wakes up and says, hey, maybe I'll become pregnant tonight so that 8 weeks from now or 12 weeks from now I can have an abortion. For so many people, it is their perceived to be their only option or their best option. And tragically, it's through a lack of education, a lack of preparedness, and a lack of availability on information around adoption that certainly, if we're able to help somebody parent their child through all the ups and downs of life, then that's a beautiful choice. But maybe let's speak a little bit more about your experience in the adoption realm and the questions that you were trying to answer with regards to how we make adoption more accessible and more realistic, because for a lot of people, the challenges that are causing them to be tempted by abortion can be alleviated by adoption, whether it's financial insecurity, whether it's a single family home, whether it's other factors. And yet people just don't know very much about adoption. And so Not that I'm going to ask you to do my job for me, but I'm curious from your perspective, what are the highest kind of areas of misinformation or lack of information that people have when it comes to adoption, and how do we set the record straight for them?
Okay, so that's a big question. But what you're pointing to is that a default response to an unplanned pregnancy often is choosing abortion. Mm-hmm. And people choose abortion because they don't have the information, the complete information. So they choose abortion out of fear. They're afraid that either their boyfriend's going to leave, their parents are going to kick them out. They don't have the money to raise a child. So all of these other reasons, they choose abortion out of fear.
Yeah.
But if we provide them with complete information about adoption and how it works these days, people choose adoption for their unborn out of love.
Yes.
And so choosing adoption out of love, it's after they get educated with the big picture of what it can look like.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many myths are existing. Many myths, like most of the objections, they might say, I can't afford it. Well, adoption expenses these days are mostly paid for by the adoptive parents. So you actually don't need to worry about money.
Okay.
You'll be better taken care of before delivery and even for a time after delivery if you make an adoption plan and choose parents who are ready, willing, and able to parent that baby.
Yeah.
So money isn't an issue if only we were to let people know that.
Mm-hmm.
We need to let people know that. And they also think it's giving my baby away. I could never give my baby away and then never see them and find out what happens. Well, that's the point of open adoption nowadays, that you're not giving your baby away. You're placing your baby into a loving family that's ready and capable. Mm-hmm. And then often with the open adoption, people get to stay in touch with that family.
Yeah.
And staying in touch is a whole continuum of what that means. It could mean a card once a year and a photo on Instagram that you get access to, or it might mean visits and Zoom calls.
Mm-hmm.
There's anything possible. And so you're not giving your baby away. You're actually choosing parents for your baby, and you're able to see them grow up.
Yeah. And I feel like so often the stigma around adoption is that it's a lack of love for the child, that you're choosing adoption because you don't love your child enough. Yet in so many ways, from everything that I've ever seen, and I've known a number of parents that have adopted children, I've known a number of people that have been adopted, and I know a couple of people that have placed their child for adoption. I'm sure that you would agree that it couldn't be further from the truth, that so often adoption is a profoundly loving choice because of that deep desire to provide that child with the best possible living situation. Is that fair to say?
Exactly, exactly. Because, I mean, really, I think one universal definition of love is caring more about the other person than you care about yourself. And that's what a mom feels when her child is born, or even when she's carrying her child. She loves that baby more than she loves herself. And so, I mean, I've always had this feeling I would walk through fire for my daughter, and she's the only one on the planet that I would walk through fire for. Yeah. And so it's a hard thing. It's really, really difficult to make an adoption plan, choose an adoption, and then place your baby. But people do it out of love.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do, it's like a huge accomplishment, like climbing Everest or something like that, where they've done it. And these birth mothers that I've talked to over the last decade are so proud of themselves. For having completed their adoption plan, for giving life to that baby, choosing a family, and then actually having a hand in creating a family.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yes.
You know, when you think about an 18-year-old or a 21-year-old who's doing something monumental like that, what a confidence boost, like what an achievement to be proud of for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
They're so pleased with themselves, and then they can see that this baby is growing up in a good situation.
Mm-hmm.
It can be just so beautiful, because that was our experience, and I believe that I was blessed with an extremely positive and fabulous experience because I was getting set up for this work. So that's kind of the very long answer to your question about how I ended up running my nonprofit. I got led here by this series of events. And I feel that it's because I had to a beautiful adoption story, and my daughter turned out to be healthy, and our birth mother turned out to be just such a fabulous, wonderful person, you know. And then she turned around and went on with her career, and later got married and had another child, and yeah.
And how beautiful, and I mean that's divine providence for us, that leading people to exactly where God needs us to be, and equipping us with the tools and experiences that we need to be able to support and guide others. And
Exactly.
yeah, I think that's absolutely beautiful. I do want to ask you in a moment here about kind of the reception of the book and the response to the book, but I did want to ask one further kind of, I don't know if it's a stigma or stereotype, but I know that there's a lot of chatter in Canada when tragically you see the headlines of whether it's foster parents or adoptive parents that have made terrible decisions and their children have gone through all kinds of traumatic experiences. And I feel like the number of people that I talk to who genuinely believe that the adoption system, there's more kids that are traumatized through the adoption system than not, and that there's more kids that fall in between the cracks of foster care and adoption, and that it's such a horrible experience for children, which tragically, there are some children that do fall in between the gaps. And there are some children whose adoptive parents are either ill-equipped or ill-vetted or whatever it may be. I wonder if you could speak a word or two of kind of clarification and maybe assurance towards maybe a mother who's considering placing their child for adoption about what goes into becoming an adoptive parent, that this isn't just somebody rolls on a bed one morning like, huh, you know what I would kind of like today? I'd like a baby. Let me order a baby from Amazon and they're going to end up on my doorstep and I'm going to have no idea how to care for them and this child is going to live a miserable life. Could you speak a word or two about what that vetting process and the preparation that goes into that?
Okay. So the very first distinction I would really like to make that's super helpful usually is for people to understand the difference between foster care and infant adoption. Those are completely different ball games, and all they have in common is that they involve a child or an infant. And so the foster care situation, it's undeniable that there's a whole lot of reform that needs to happen in the foster care system, because it's not set up right now to it's not set up to place children into adoptive homes. The goal of the whole foster care system is to reunite children with their biological parents. And yet, they have been removed from their biological parents for a very good reason, whether it's abuse or neglect or danger or drugs or prison or whatever. The children have been removed from biological parents, and the foster system is trying to reunite them. And so there's a lot of bureaucracy that's rolled up in that. There's a lot of challenges that's rolled up in that. But it's a completely different ball game from infant adoption, where we have, you know, a perfectly upstanding young woman who has gotten pregnant by accident, and she's choosing adoption voluntarily out of love for her baby. That's choosing parents. That's not having your kid taken away from you. So that's a completely different story. So if people understand the difference, it would help them sort out some of the very sensationalistic stories that they've heard about trauma in both areas. So
That's
then
a
when you
brilliant distinction. Thank you for that.
so then when you look at infant adoption and how that actually, if it's a healthy woman in a healthy pregnancy, choosing a healthy home for the healthy baby, then things have a much better chance of turning out well, because everything's been thoughtful and it's been decided upon with the child at the center of the decision making. So that's why it's a different story, and that's why it turns out most often it turns out quite nicely.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think that clarification is so good for a lot of people. And maybe to go one step further as well, maybe speak to the ongoing support that both the birth mother and the adoptive parents have. Because I know that from my own personal experience, a good friend of mine has extended family who received a child through adoption. And as the child grew, it became more apparent that they had several learning disabilities, whether ADHD, dyslexia, and a few things like that. And how I've been blown away by the amount of support that the adoptive family has from numerous different agencies to ensure that they are able to provide the stable home and a good education, and that there are curveballs that may get thrown to adoptive parents, just like there may be curveballs that are thrown to birthing parents as well. But maybe speak a moment to, and I'm sure that it's different state by state and across the country kind of thing, but what kind of support, what kind of counseling and guidance may be available to both birthing parents and the adoptive families, I suppose?
Yeah, well, so once, you know, with any parental journey, you have no idea what's going to happen next year. So, you know, adoptive parents need to face that the same way that biological parents need to face that. And so we'd all turn to the resources that are available in our community. We hope to get, you know, information about those in the timely way that we need them. It's just at that point, whether your child is autistic or ADD or whatever the situation is, you know, the parents are needing to find the right resources, because that's our job as parents. Yeah.
Gotcha. That makes a ton of sense. So let's talk another moment about the book. We're going to drop in the show notes below for everyone listening, link to be able to purchase that book. What has the response been from that book, both within your kind of close-knit community and feedback from friends and family, but also from the community at large? Was it the response that you were hoping for, or slightly different?
I'm really glad that people are getting a little bit educated. One of the responses that I hear most often is, I had no idea that it was only 1% of the people who are facing unplanned pregnancy, or that there are, you know, almost 3 million unplanned pregnancies a year. You know, the people are really surprised by the statistics.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that they're very surprised by are the side effects of abortion, because I have like hundreds of footnotes in this book to point to the proof that there's a link with breast cancer, there's a link with mental illness, there's a link with future compromise of preterm births. You know, all of that stuff is very well footnoted, I have to say, so that people can't argue with it. But again, you don't hear about these things from the people who are making money off of performing abortions, because it's all about the money. It's not about healthcare. Come on. Let's be honest about that. And so if people have a financial incentive to gain, it's going to shape the input they have.
Absolutely.
And so we need to look at what people have to gain when they're trying to talk to you. And that's why and there's also a huge section on resources at the back of the book. All these resources are available to us from people who are actually running nonprofits and have nothing to gain.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't benefit from running Unplanned Good. It's something that's in my heart, and I thank God every day for my daughter and her birth mother. The first book is dedicated to her birth mother for the choices that she made. So I think we got to follow the money and know what's motivating people to give their input.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like you said, when you are motivated by your own journey and a deep desire to support and love birth mother, child, and these families that are able to grow in the ways that they've been yearning for whatever reason that they are pursuing adoption, whether it's infertility, whether it's other factors as well. I think that, when you compare that to the abortion industry and the messaging that comes out of there, I think that getting people to stop and think is so bad.
Yeah, to stop and think. But also, you know, all these women, even if it's only like 1% in the US and 2% in Canada, of these women facing unplanned pregnancy who choose adoption, they do it when someone in their life has recommended it to them, where their mom or their aunt or their pastor says, "Hey, sweetie, consider adoption here. I know you're scared. I know you're terrified. I know you're shocked that you're pregnant," even though it's 1 in 4 teenagers who become pregnant by 20 years old. You know, it's the mom or the mentor who makes all the difference. Because if you, like, they would normally turn to their mom for good advice by the time your child is in their teens, they're hopefully used to getting good advice from their parents. So if they turn to their mom, that's why we need to educate the 40 somethings and the 50 somethings about adoption. We want them to be able to suggest it. And that makes all the difference.
Yeah. And maybe that's a perfect segue into the second book, because while you mentioned that the first book was geared towards reaching not necessarily strictly speaking pro-abortion people, but whether it's pro-choice people or people who may not necessarily identify with a pro-life worldview, your second book was more geared from a faith perspective towards people within faith communities, and maybe speak towards what Christians, what pro-lifers, what people who want to help with the adoption process, if they were informed about it, needed to know, and what went into writing that second book.
Well, so that's the thing, is that bringing the church into it, because this is one topic, unplanned pregnancy, where the church just, for whatever reason, is backing off and saying, man, I don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole. You know, I don't want to be involved in that conversation. And the church leaders, if they're saying, you know, actually sex belongs inside of marriage and then it's not a problem anyway, well, theoretically, okay. Mm-hmm. But from a practical standpoint, if you're facing, you know, almost 3 million unplanned pregnancies in the US, almost 1 million unplanned pregnancies in Canada every year, the church can't afford to stay out of this conversation.
Yeah.
And so I'm really hoping that the church will embrace this discussion. And when they do, and you have a woman in your community, in your church, facing unplanned pregnancy, the first question is not, well, what the hell happened with you? The first question is, here's the facts today. Let's see how we can help you.
Yeah.
You know, but the shame and the retribution and the rebuke, not helpful. So let's start from where we are today and figure out how we're going to go forward together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And tragedy, I mean, statistics show that Christians are very similarly likely to become pregnant and very similarly likely to have abortions. And tragically, the number of people that I talk to on doorsteps and street corners that say that they are lapsed Christians, lapsed Catholics, whatever it may be. And tragically, how often that goes back towards an unplanned pregnancy, sometimes even unplanned pregnancies in which they parented the child or placed the child for adoption, and yet the response that they received from their church or from members within their church pushed them away from maintaining in membership of their church or communion with their church, kind of thing, and how heartbreaking that is. And to be able to inform pastors and leaders, but also congregants and members, to be able to have that loving witness that, yeah, the first question is, like you said, what the heck went wrong, or didn't we teach you anything? But yeah, rather, how do I help, and how do we,
right,
how do we navigate this? Yeah.
Yeah. We have to leave the judgment at the door. I mean, it's not helpful, and it just pushes people away. And then the other thing too, for the church to recognize, is that if you are guilting somebody into quote unquote keeping their baby, you know, and forcing them into the next 20 years of parenting, that is an overwhelming idea to this 17-year-old that we're trying to reach. And so forcing her into parenting, which statistics show again and again, single parenting is not the path towards a successful life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that more often ends in poverty and living below the poverty level and government assistance and, you know, not having a successful economic life.
Yeah.
So single parenting is not necessarily the answer. I mean, if you're equipped to do it and you have a partner or you have an income or you have a career or you've had a degree, whatever, maybe you can handle it. But for most people, single parenting is just a continuation of this hellish set of choices.
Exactly. And how do we foster a conversation around love and charity towards the other? Like you touched on earlier, of how do we think first and foremost of our child? And if we can foster that in our teens and anyone else who's navigating pregnancy, and this is motivated by what will serve my child the best. Certainly traditionally there, obviously we've all read stories and maybe even had family members who were not quite gang pressed into getting married when they were found to be unplanned pregnancy. But if it's a matter of setting up a family on the foundation of bitterness and resentment and guilt and pressure and all that kind of thing, then how is that family going to manifest, and how are the shockwaves going to go through when it comes to the attention and nurturing that you give to your child? I'm not guaranteeing, obviously, that a child whose parents got married because they felt like they had to after they became pregnant outside of wedlock are going to be terrible parents. But I think that that certainly complicates the conversation. And so at the very least, if the conversation can start with a, how do we best demonstrate love towards the child, whether that is motivates people towards getting married and parenting the child, or whether that motivates them towards placing that child for adoption. I think that that's certainly where churches should be starting.
That's what we're hoping for. Let's get there. Yeah, let's get there, and just love that woman and walk alongside her to help her evaluate her options, give her full information, really full information, and then stand by her while she's making her decisions.
Absolutely. Maybe I'm sure that in just over 15 years of this ministry, that there are countless stories that have come across, whether your desk as you help other people counsel and support and whatnot, or even people that you have journeyed with very, very personally and very intimately. Would you be up for sharing? And I know that there's obviously a degree of anonymity that would need to go into any story that would be shared, but are there stories that you can share? I know there's some on the website, which again, I'll link in the show notes, but would you be up for sharing a story or two to showcase this journey of adoption and how you and your ministry have been able to come alongside to make these beautiful things happen?
So one of the most common comments that I hear from women who post-abortive women is, I wish I had known. I wish I had known that adoption was an option. So the women that I'm talking to now, and I'm doing a lot of speaking on like national conferences and CAFO and such, they are sharing their stories about how they came to choose adoption and then how things went after that. So there's one of these birth mothers that I met at the Christian Alliance for Orphans conference, and we created a birth mother panel. And the people in the audience were involved in adoption somehow. Like they worked for adoption agencies, they worked for foster departments, foster care, they did foster training, they were social workers, whatever. And so I had a couple of birth mothers up on this panel, and they were sharing their stories. And the comments in the evaluation form later, I'd say close to half of the cards, when I asked what was the most surprising thing that you learned today in this birth mother panel, close to half of them said, I had no idea that the birth mother and the adoptive mother could actually have a friendly and loving relationship going forward. And so the whole idea of open adoption and what that's meant to people when they realize you don't have to push the birth mother out of the picture. The adoptive mother doesn't have to feel threatened. They can actually respect each other's role in this family. And when that happens, it can just be so beautiful. And that's what my daughter's birth mother and I had, you know, for the first 20 years of her life. It was, it was very, we got to see her once in a while. She came and visited once in a while. And just seeing these birth mothers, seeing them thrive and seeing them get this constant reassurance that they made the right decision, because they're seeing my daughter and us in a healthy relationship. And then the birth mother herself is going off to start her career. So in our case, our birth mother who delivered, my daughter's name is Sydney. And so when she delivered Sydney, you know, we separated there at the hospital lobby. In this very teary, you know, conversation. And then our birth mother went on to college. We went home and we didn't talk to each other for about 4 years because she was just digging in on school and graduating university. And then after that, she contacted us and she said, hey, I'm done with school, got my bachelor's. You know, she did a great job in college. And after college, you know, it was 2002 or three, and we had invaded Iraq, and she said she wanted to join the army. And so she wanted to come see Sydney before she left for officer training school. And so that was kind of the beginning of getting back in touch and keeping tabs on each other and following her progress through her years in the military. And so eventually then she got stationed all over the world, but she eventually got brought back to the US. And at that point, then we started actually seeing each other more often. And so we could stay in each other's lives. And I did my best to foster a good relationship between the two of them, because it got Sydney's questions answered. And that was the whole point of the open adoption.
That's so cool. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm sure there's so many other stories that whether they're stories that are partway through completion or all the way through completion. Just so cool how this can be a beautiful option for so many people, and that it can be for so many others, especially as we continue to remove the barriers that might prevent people from thinking about adoption. I wanted to touch briefly. You guys have a wonderful press release from earlier this year about some of the work that you were doing at the state level in Idaho, about a couple of bills that were passed at the state level. And I'm sure that almost every state, if not every single state, has a different kind of legal framework when it comes to the adoption process. But I was wondering if you could share a little bit about whether all three of the bills that were passed, or whichever one kind of stands out most to you, and the role that Unplanned Good had in advancing, maybe speaking into some of these legislative components.
Right. So the way that we got started in policy work, because I'm not a politician, that would not have been my choice for a career move. But the way that we got started was the whole concept of, you know, there, once Roe got overturned, and then there were several states that banned abortion altogether. And just the concept of, you can't just say no to people about the solution that they're leaning towards. You can't just say no. You have to give them an alternative. You have to point them towards something else, and then give them a really good reason why you're pointing them towards the something else. So making adoption better understood, making full information available so that they understand the downsides of it. So the idea then was to go to some of these states that had banned abortion and say, okay, why are you though not advocating for adoption? Mm-hmm. Like, let's make that better known. Let's make that easier. Let's remove some of the barriers. Let's become a super friendly, adoption friendly state.
Yeah.
If you really want to ban abortion and you want people to accept that,
yeah,
then let's make some other changes in the other direction and make adoption better known and easier. And so the reception that I got to those ideas in Idaho was astoundingly positive, because people understood right away why that made sense. And so we were talking in Idaho about what could be done to make adoption easier. And the number one thing is it starts with awareness. It starts with women understanding that adoption is an option and understanding how it works today. And so the first bill we got passed, which I am considering a pretty big achievement. I'm glad that we were able to be successful with it. The first one is that any Idaho public school, whether it's K through 12, like the whole grammar school era, if they're teaching in a sex ed class or a health ed class about contraception or STDs or anything related to any of that stuff, they will also educate about adoption. They'll talk about it, open adoption. They'll explain the local community resources to support adoption. And they'll also explain the Safe Haven bill, which, if you're not familiar with the Safe Haven bill, that means that any woman who delivers a baby can take that baby to a fire station or a hospital and place the baby there and not have any fear of prosecution or abandonment. You know, it means that the baby's going to be put into a safe place because you've decided you don't want a parent.
Yeah.
So, so educating kids in the schools about adoption, about Safe Haven, and about just knowing what adoption could look like for them, that's half the battle, is letting them know that it's an option.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thrilled that they're not just going to hear about contraception and STDs, but they're also going to hear about adoption. That's huge.
Yes.
So I'm working right now with the Department of Education in Idaho to vet out some curricula to offer to the school districts throughout the state. And so that was one of the three that got passed last year, was the education bill. And then the other two, one of them had to do with removing the government cap on expenses for the birth mothers, what the adoptive parents could reimburse.
Yeah.
And the third one was about banning the facilitators who were unlicensed and unmonitored, because they were kind of shady in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And so those are the three that we got passed in Idaho. Yeah. And then this summer, there's if you're familiar with the group Live Action.
Oh, yes.
Lila Rose.
Yeah.
So Lila Rose has her fourth year of her pro-life lawmakers summit is happening this year
okay.
in August. And so there, I'm going to be able to explain why these lawmakers would consider pro-adoption legislation. And it's the same concept as it, you all are saying no to abortion. Let's say yes to adoption. And here's what that would look like.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about going to that lawmaker summit in August.
Gotcha. That is so cool. And with, I feel like there's so many pro-lifers, at least up here in Canada, that they gravitate towards political action and all that kind of thing. I'm curious if that, I mean, since Dobbs has changed, obviously that's changed your ministry in a number of ways. With the success in Idaho, has there been appetite from other states or other kind of regions that are reaching out to you asking like, hey, can you help us bring something similar to Nebraska, Mississippi, wherever these other states? Or is it still kind of in the early stages where this upcoming conference with Live Action will kind of be a springboard towards trying to draw some more of that interest?
Well, so the first step in that whole effort is letting these lawmakers know that they can advocate for adoption as a way to meet their pro-life goals. They've only been thinking about anti-abortion stuff up until now. But if we flip that narrative and we say, let's talk about advancing adoption and making that a more common choice, then we're achieving our pro-life goals, right? Even further, we're making new families.
Yeah.
We're not just saving one baby, we're creating a whole new family. So this is really good stuff. So changing that mentality within the lawmakers, I'm thrilled that Live Action is doing this conference. And they have, right now they have over 75 lawmakers signed up for this August gathering. And the people are going to be able to go there and hear about pro-life legislation, because nobody thinks of everything by themselves. And so the value that they're bringing is to consolidate and gather up all of this pro-adoption legislation or pro-life legislation in one place. And then the people who are attending the conference can take those model bills back to their own legislature and work on introducing them next session.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I think that's so important. And looking at the legal landscape here in Canada and just how different in some ways legislation works here and how important, I genuinely believe that being proactive on that pro-family, pro-support front is going to be even before we have bans on abortion or anything like that. I know that my colleague Jonathan Van Maren has spoken with people from Hungary and other places, Malta and Ireland and other places around the world, that have taken a very proactive pro-family stance on legislation rather than simply looking at the restrictive kind of order and how the two can kind of work together and make sure that this is a comprehensive approach to navigating unplanned pregnancies and not just, like you said, telling somebody no.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what now then? Like, how do I make this happen? I know that Texas obviously came under a lot of fire, and then there was a lot of people trying to point towards however many millions of dollars they were allocating towards pregnancy support and whatnot. I'm working on trying to get somebody on the show who can speak to like, what does that money go towards, and how does that actually help navigate challenging pregnancies, or is it tied up in bureaucracy and we're still leaving people hung out to dry when it comes to challenging pregnancies? Because that's a huge component, especially with California being willing to receive people into having abortions in California. And I know that Gavin Newsom has said a lot of things. I don't know legislation-wise if they're actually covering the travel expenses for people to come to California to have abortions, but that's another reason why it can't just be, no, you can't have this here. Okay, fine, I'll go elsewhere, but rather you can't have this, but you can have this other thing, which is way better for everybody involved.
Way better for everybody involved. That's right. Because we could talk about how it's so much better for the woman and her health. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's much better for the baby who gets to live. And it's better for the adoptive parents who have a multi-year dream finally come true.
Yeah. Yeah, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. I feel like there's a million other directions that we could go. I know that we're going to start winding down the episode here in the next couple minutes here, but I'm curious, what other kind of areas should we be talking about in the realm of adoption? I apologize for throwing my job on you yet again, but I feel like you are the expert in where does this conversation need to flow for so many people. And so when you think about the presentations, you mentioned that you've been giving more and more presentations and workshops in recent years, where do you feel like the conversation around adoption needs to go and what people need to be more familiar with or more active around to be able to make more unplanned pregnancies result in born children, whether adopted or parented themselves.
You know, the biggest myth that I would really like to knock down at some point is that, you know, if you're a typical 45-year-old man, you might say to yourself, this has nothing to do with me. It's not my deal, you know. But the fact is that if one in four teenagers are pregnant by 20, it is in your community. It's in your neighborhood. It's in your church. It's in your school. It's at the grocery store. There's a pregnant woman everywhere, you know, a woman facing unplanned pregnancy everywhere. And for you to, you know, realize that you are the one who can start this discussion, advocate for adoption, understand why it's healthier, understand why it's healthier for everybody, you know, and then you ask yourself, you know, if it's your niece or if it's your daughter or if it's your neighbor, do I love that young woman? Do I want the best for her? If I really do, then I will step up to the plate and have this conversation and let her know why adoption should be considered and why I really want the best for her. And if you really want the best for her, you'll get yourself educated and be able to talk about it. It's like, you know, if we want to teach kids today not to smoke, right?
Yeah.
We don't condone that anymore.
Yeah.
We frown upon that. And we say, please, sweetie, don't start smoking. It's like a really bad habit. It's a lifelong thing, blah, blah, blah. You know, there are a lot of reasons why we don't want somebody to start smoking. And we try to talk them out of it, and we bring in all the information, and we point to research, and we discuss lung cancer, and we talk about all that stuff. It's the same thing. I want the best for you out of love for you. And so I'm going to try to help you understand why you would want to choose adoption over abortion.
Beautiful. And again, there's a ton of good content on your website about frequently asked questions and what people can need to know. And I'm so glad that you bring up that smoking analogy, because that's where I was going to go next, because there's a huge radio campaign right now, at least in Calgary, Alberta, where I am, about drugs-free Canada. And people like, do you want to talk to your kids about drugs but don't know where to start? Go to our website and we'll coach you through how to bring up and talk about drugs. And so kind of a two-part question where... The ideal age, or kind of the age range in which we should be starting to talk about adoption and pregnancy with our kids, and maybe a tool or two for how parents can navigate those conversations, which I'm sure there's lots of awkward conversations that parents have with their children. How do we navigate these conversations in ways that are going to open the door for further conversation rather than closing the door because it was so cringy and so awkward that nobody ever wants to go back there ever again?
You mean when we're talking to our kids?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Well, so the very practical stuff I would start with, or that I did start with, is, yeah, you know, you do get to make your own decisions because you're a teenager now or something like that, you know. But the fact is that sex leads to pregnancy. That's kind of the plan. That's kind of the biology. That's the way it goes. That's the natural outcome. Yep. So be prepared. And then once you are facing a pregnancy, there's actually no easy answer.
Yeah.
You are on the spot and there is no easy answer. And so, you know, you can say when, you know, if and when that happens, because you decided to have sex, if and when that happens, you know, I would love to be able to walk with you, and we will together explore all of the pros and cons of all three of your options. You know, because you can abort, you can parent, or you can choose parents.
Yeah.
So if we replace the word adoption with choose parents, that would be helpful as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Because adoption, like you say, has a lot of stigmas to it. But if you're already a parent, if there's a 5-month-old baby inside of you, there, you're already a parent. So we can either parent or we can choose parents.
Yeah.
So a little bit of adaptation of our language could be helpful as well.
I like that. I like that. And I like that idea of establishing early that one of the most important parts, if not the most important part, is wanting to be part of that journey. That there's so many people that are, like we've talked about, terrified to tell their parents, to tell their church leaders, tell people in their life. And so they end up going to their school counselor. They end up going to somebody else, or they end up just on the internet trying to find somebody who's going to help them. And again, I've spoken to dozens of heartbroken parents who found out their teenager had an abortion after having not spoken to them about it whatsoever. And why didn't they talk to me?
Yeah. Not that's another thing,
right?
Is why should I listen to you? I mean, my daughter actually asked me that one day, why should I listen to you? And the answer is because I love you more than anyone else on this planet.
Yeah.
And so, and because I've always been honest with you. So yeah. Put those two together and you're in good hands over here. So
exactly. And I'm willing to go through the trenches with you that all three of these options are going to have difficulties with them. They're all going to be different difficulties. Obviously, some of them are going to have bigger difficulties than others. And yet I am here with you for the long run, and not the same can't be said for the abortion provider any more than it can be said for your school counselor, because your school counselor isn't going to be there for you when you're 25 years old. The school counselor isn't going to be there for you when you are struggling to carry children to term. Yeah. I am in your life and I want to be in your life for its entirety.
Forever.
And
Yeah. I'm your number one fan. You know it.
Yeah.
And so loving you more than anybody else on the planet gives me a little bit of privilege in here.
I'm sure is a vulnerable step for a parent when it's a matter of obviously the disapproval that might want to jump off of your tongue when your child does come to you telling you that they're 17 years old and pregnant and wanting to be able to have that, like, what the heck is wrong with you? But for the child to be empowered to be like, no, mom, no, dad, you told me that you're here with me. Like we can have the lectures at another point, but right now I need you to come through on your commitment that you gave to me when I was 12 years old, that regardless of what ups and downs I go through in life, whenever I become pregnant, whether being a grandfather or grandmother starts when my kid is 22 years old and happily married, or whether being a grandparent for me starts when my kid is 16 years old and just came home from their first school party, I will be a good grandparent and I will be an even better parent, kind of thing.
Or whether your kid is 22 days old and in the womb.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Terry, this has been wonderful. I thank you so much, first and foremost, for your ministry and for the witness that you bring to adoption and to this entire beautiful process, and so much smaller but still profound, for joining me on the Pro-Life Guys podcast and taking the time to share with our listeners all about this journey and what we need to know about it.
I appreciate you so much, Cam, and your work and your podcast and your approach. Just love it. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome. We're going to drop a million show notes before. Terry, you and I are going to be in touch, because I would love to get a couple of books and maybe even signed books if we can pull that off. And we'll send you some payment on that, and then we'll do a raffle for all of you in the audience. So stay tuned in the intro and exit. We'll do some raffles for that, for engagement that way as well. So thank you for that. Blessings on your ministry and on your family and all that sort of thing. And I hope that we can talk together again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right, folks, that was my conversation with Terry Marcroft from Unplanned Good. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation as much as I do, and I hope that you're going to enter into the draw to win one of the four books, signed books that she has. If you can comment on the YouTube video on our YouTube channel, hopefully you're subscribed already, but I won't even be checking that. You just need to comment on it. Like the video if you will as well, but again, I'm not going to even be checking on that. I will be looking just for those who comment on the YouTube video. And so please do that. And from there, I will do a draw and shoot you a book. If you want to put in the comment which book you would prefer, please do let me know. And for those of you who are interested, I will drop both of those books and a number of other links in the show notes below. Thank you a ton for tuning in for this episode. And I look forward to having you along for the ride for more episodes to come. Thanks much. God bless you abundantly, wherever you're at, however many hours are left in your day.